Good afternoon, and thanks for tuning in to Ask the Mayor here on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for being with us on the program this week. My guest speaking to us by cell phone from Indianapolis is Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. And if you've got a question for him in our next half hour, we'd love to have it via telephone. You can call 765-496-1999. You can send an email to ask@wbaa.org as well, or you can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Well, Mr. Mayor, what sends you to Indianapolis today?
Well, I had a couple of meetings here and just trying to wrap up some loose ends. I'll be spending quite a bit of time back and forth with Indianapolis here in the next few days. And, you know, we're revamping economic development. We're also looking at some of our stellar projects and a lot of back and forth with various issues there.
Well, let's get right to the news about some of your stellar projects. You sent out a press release about a week ago announcing that you had to change your plans for Fusion 54, which is kind of the centerpiece of everything that you're doing. First of all, if you would please explain why that was. Why did you have to make those changes?
Well, as we moved through that process, a couple of issues had really started to surface in a significant way. And the first was that we're using block grant funding to fund part of that project. And that's been an intention all along. But as we moved through, it became apparent that the activities that we sought to perform in that building were not fitting with the eligible activities for block grant funding. That was forcing us to start, we were making adjustments to our programming, and it became apparent to me that we were starting to really change what we were doing in the building and getting away from the original intent, which was to create this fusion effect of our growth entities. It was becoming more of a community center type building, and we already have a community center. We have a new public library with public meeting space, so that really didn't make sense to alter the use just to get the funding. The second issue that had arisen was that we originally gone into this with the intent that this would be about a $4 million project. Despite everyone's efforts, we were still running, you know, we'd have been as high as close to 8 million estimates, and we were down to about 6, but we just couldn't trim that any further and really retain the intent of the building. So that being said, if you have that kind of funding, you have that kind of funding gap, it means that more is going to come from the local side. And once again, it just didn't make sense to go down that road and create a new building at that kind of cost in today's climate.
You had said that you thought you were going to be able to use block grants for some of this, and then it turned out not. That seems like the kind of thing that would normally have been investigated beforehand.
Well, we are having some serious discussions with the state agency about those various issues right now. You know, we had been given the green light from the state agencies all along that this fit with the block grant funding, and this was an eligible activity, and there was no problem at all. It wasn't until late December that they raised the question that this might not be something that was eligible. So that is a very serious concern, you know, and we are having discussions with both the governor's office and the lieutenant governor's office about that very issue, and I think that has arisen in other stellar communities. So a lot to think about there, but, you know, as we worked through this, we started to look at alternative options, and it became apparent that one of our alternatives really made more sense, and that is to acquire an existing building. We could acquire the building, do the remodeling, and it would cost probably one-third of what we were looking at the other way, and ultimately accomplish the same goal at the same level, maybe even higher.
So with the redesign of the project costing less than you had budgeted, does that perhaps free up a little cash for some other projects, which it sort of stands to reason might also cost more than projected as the economy continues to improve?
Well, it does that in a couple of ways. First, it frees up some of the local funding that we were going to have to commit to Fusion 54, but it also frees up that block grant funding that we were awarded through the Stellar process. We have a meeting tomorrow with officials from the Office of Community and Rural Affairs to talk about that block grant funding and how we might move that to some of the other projects. So we have an initial okay from them, but we need to talk through some specifics. So it's safe to say that we will be acquiring the site where Fusion was going to be located and still turn that into a trailhead park with parking and things like that. And then possibly, like I said, transferring some of that funding to existing other projects.
As you were projecting what all of these things were going to cost, do you think that the city adequately figured in how much the economy was going to improve by the time you were going to be able to bid these things out?
Well, I don't think we did. And, you know, that's a crystal ball type of situation. And we used experts with very good track records to come up with those estimates. I certainly don't have that ability. But no one really predicted that, you know, for example, the building economy right now would be what it is. And when you go to bid on building a new building, it's just not in your favor right now, depending on the time of the year that you bid that. A short way of saying it is contractors just don't need to work. They are very busy. So it's not really competitive, and the costs are much higher than what we thought.
Overall, do you think this means you're going to have to scale back on what you had hoped to do among your stellar projects because those contracting and construction firms are able to up their prices as they've got lots of demand?
I don't think so, because the only project we were really doing much building in was the Fusion 54. And I think this change addresses that and really allows us to get more than what we had originally envisioned and get it for less. The other projects could be affected to some degree, but they're not building projects. They're park-type projects and trail projects. So you know, the economy and the market is a factor, but I think we can keep that in check. And the extra funding that we freed up hopefully will offset any of that.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA News. We're talking today with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. We'd love to have your phone call questions for him. Call 765-496-1999. You can also email questions to ask@WBAA.org or tweet questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Well, you and I have been talking for a couple of months as well about your investigation into rental properties in the city. We've talked about how you've got a couple of interns from Wabash College who are helping you kind of cross-reference some data to give you a little bit more information about who's living where. How's that process going?
A little more slowly than I would like, but we are making progress. You know, I'm hoping to have some results, you know, in another, you know, month or two maybe, but you know, what we're seeing is holding consistent that there is a problem. There is a deep concern, and we're identifying that. We're not done, and we're not close to being done with those results, but we definitely have something that we need to be thinking about.
Is the city actually planning legal action against any unscrupulous folks you might come across?
Not at this time. You know, it gets a little confusing. It's not necessarily directly the city's responsibility. You know, our plan is to produce the data and deliver that to the county officials who are responsible for this and ask very publicly that something be done to address this. If we get past that point and we're not getting satisfaction, then I think we'll consider every option that's on the table. But we're certainly going to give them the opportunity to fix it first.
Do you get the sense from your chats with the auditor that maybe she would be willing to take legal action? I mean, she's told me that she has a very limited budget just in general, and so I would imagine that if there were legal costs that were to go along with this without any money on the front end, that could be difficult.
Yeah, I'm not sure. You know, between her and I, we've never discussed the possibility of legal action, so I really couldn't speak on her behalf. But I do know that as you start recovering funds, a lot of that can be used for the continuing investigation and the continuing work of making sure that these are above board.
Right, but it would seem like you would need some sort of pump priming funds at the very beginning to begin the first couple of investigations, which would then yield you, hopefully, money that you could use for future investigations, right?
Well, I think we're giving them the pump priming that they need, and the city is certainly open to helping in any way we can to make sure that's done. So I don't know how much of a prime we need, but I think they're getting some prime already.
Have you had any conversations with your city lawyers, who I know you've talked to throughout this process, about how much corroborating information would be necessary if anyone decided at some point in the future to pursue this in court?
We've talked about several of those things, and I don't think we have a clear outline right now of exactly how we would proceed in that kind of pursuit. But you know, we're putting it all together. We'll see what the data shows us, and then we'll see how the county reacts and go from there.
On to other things, later this evening you're scheduled to take part in the annual city-county update speech, kind of a joint state of the city, state of the county type address. What are you planning to have your message sound like?
Well, I'm going to talk about several things, and I'm going to preface my comments tonight by saying there is so much going on that I can't possibly speak to all of it, or we'll be there all night. But I am going to spend quite a bit of time this year talking about our efforts to really go after the infrastructure and start building the kind of community in which people want to live, work, and play well into the future. So I think infrastructure will be a recurring theme in what I'm talking about tonight. I'll be talking about the combined sewer project in the downtown this summer. I'll be talking about some stormwater projects, the fire station project, several key infrastructure issues like that.
Do you think that your message will be received as, or do you want it to be received as, the status quo is not good enough and we're going to have to work fairly hard to make sure that we're not accepting of the status quo?
I'm not sure it'll be received that way, but that's the message I'll be delivering. You know, I'll talk about economic development and some of these infrastructure issues that have lingered for quite a long time. And there's an expression that I like to use, and maybe I overuse it, but it's time to stop kicking the can down the road. And I'm going to use that expression a couple of times tonight because there are some issues that our community has literally just kicked down the road and kicked down the road and let the next people worry about it. And it's time to step up, address those, and move forward. So I'm sure people are going to hear that message. Whether they all perceive it that way, I don't know.
The reason I ask is because one thing I've noticed from covering quite a number of municipal governments in the state is that when you're asking people to change the status quo, when you're asking people to get away from the, well, the reason we're doing this is because we've always done it that way mindset, that can be among the hardest things that a mayor, a county council, a board of county commissioners can ask of citizens. And it can be the kind of thing that can have pushback. You, of course, won your most recent reelection with without even a challenger, and so you perhaps have a little bit of political capital to spend. Are you thinking of it in that way? Are you thinking that this is a time where you're going to have to push back against some of the prevailing notions in your community to get it to move forward?
Well, it is a time that you expend some of that capital and you really reach out and try to make some things happen. And now, what I've noticed, in at least in our community, is that the public at large is not opposed to change. And it's been kind of ironic to watch that as I push change and I change things, I get very positive feedback from the community. Now, you'll get some pushback and some negative from the people directly involved. Economic development being a good example, I announced significant change there. The response from the public at large was overwhelmingly positive. In fact, I had no negative comments at all. Now, I had quite a bit of pushback and negative response from the people directly involved who had a stake in it, who, you know, maybe were on a board or worked there or something like that, but nothing from the community. So I don't know that it's fair to say our community is resistant to change. I think our community reached some watershed moments that maybe opened their eyes that change has to occur. So there will be some pushback, you know, from some of those groups. But we will work through that. And at the end of the day, it comes back to, it's not as much about capital, it's about credibility. And, you know, if I'm saying and suggesting that we follow a different path and change some things, I feel like the council and people are largely going to follow. They'll ask some questions, are largely going to follow until I give them a reason not to.
Do you and the other folks who are giving speeches this evening coordinate your message, especially if in your message, your speech personally, there's going to be a little bit of potential for pushback, or there's going to be a slightly different message than perhaps has been uttered before?
We coordinate some. We don't certainly trade speeches and all of that. Commissioner Bain will be delivering the county's side of it, the state of the county. He and I have texted back and forth a few times to say, hey, are you covering this? And I'll cover this if you want to talk about that. So we have coordinated from that aspect. It's been interesting in past years to see how that plays out when there's not a lot of direct coordination, but in the end, our remarks end up being very similar and kind of fit very well together. So I'm sure he'll do a fantastic job tonight. And you don't really need to do much of that coordination when you work very closely day by day throughout the year. We know what's happening with one another. We understand what we need to do together, so it all kind of fits.
What if you genuinely did have some different opinions than the county leaders? Is it all right to have some divisions in these speeches, or maybe even debate between them? Or do you think it's important to have that sort of united front that people can coalesce around?
Well, there certainly will be issues at times on which we don't totally agree. Maybe our interests don't exactly align, but for the most part, what we're trying to accomplish is the same thing. And it's very important to us that we present that unified front to the outside world. You know, when we're trying to lure potential employers and investors to our community, the simple way to think of this is they quite frankly do not have time for somebody else's drama. And when they look at a community and they see infighting between a city and a county, and I know that occurs all over the state. You know, I just was looking at a case the last couple of days in the southern part of the state. When they see that kind of activity and drama and distraction, they're not interested. You know, they have other things to do. They're not going to get involved in that. So we have to make sure that we talk through the things on which we don't disagree or don't agree, find mutual ground, compromise, and move forward. And that's what we've done very well in our community. And it really is about compromise. You know, that's how I think our city and county can get along, is that there are things on which, as a city, I have to compromise to help the county. And there are times they have to compromise to help the city. And we trade that back and forth. And I know they'll be there for us, and we'll be there for them.
You mentioned talking a lot about infrastructure in your speech tonight. I noticed where your city's Board of Public Works has approved a plan that would replace about 600 feet of stormwater pipe. And you and I have talked about replacing a lot of the infrastructure under your streets, and talked a lot about the combined sewer overflow project that your city and actually quite a number of Indiana cities are doing. Was the section of stormwater pipe that's just being talked about in particularly bad shape that it got prioritized?
It's in worse than bad shape, and it's been a lingering issue that has been out there for a while. It actually has collapsed in areas, and this represents the outfall for the storm line into the creek. And right now it's the outfall for the combined line, but it will become the outfall for what will solely be a storm line in the future. So we had to start there, and this project has dragged on a little bit longer than we would have liked, partially because it also involves a state highway and a bridge. So the bridge drains into this collection system as well, which puts NDOT in the equation, which, quite frankly, has slowed the process down. But they're participating and providing some funding for this as well. And we'll get this piece replaced and then start moving to the south through our downtown. And I'm going to warn everybody tonight, it will be a messy summer in downtown Crawfordsville. There will be a lot of construction. And there's just no way around it. We have to get these issues addressed, fix the area, put it back very nicely, and then move forward.
As I've been talking with Mayor Dennis here in West Lafayette about the beginnings of the State Street project, which is slated to basically build a downtown from scratch in West Lafayette, one of the things he's been saying to me about the reason they are trying to have it only take about 3 years to do is they looked back at things such as the railroad relocation project in Lafayette, which took 20 years. And by the time they were putting in the last sections, they were already repairing the first sections that had been done. Are you taking steps to try to make sure that you get this done as fast as you can so you don't encounter such phenomena?
We are. And, you know, we've met with the contractors involved, the design team involved, especially with the CSO project. And I've made it very clear. I want you to get in there, work on one area at a time. Don't tear the entire downtown up. Do one area at a time, get it done, put it back, and then move to the next. Because I'm very aware that this project, if not managed properly, could actually destroy some of our downtown businesses. If that area is torn up for months and months and a real mess and people stay out of the area, it could cripple them and maybe put some of them out of business. So we have to make sure that this is done in a coordinated, orderly, as quickly as possible, and get it done and get out of the way and let life go on. So that's not always easy. You know, with those groups, but I will be leaning on them very hard.
Are you hearing from individual business owners already about their economic worries about their own shop, their own restaurant, et cetera?
We have not heard yet. There is a series of public meetings coming up and a series of meetings with those affected businesses, and I'm sure we will get an earful at that time. I don't doubt that one bit. And we will definitely be listening to what they're saying and definitely take any suggestions they have to make this as painless as possible.
One of the things that's interesting about your downtown versus the downtown that West Lafayette is trying to build is West Lafayette's along State Street. There are quite a number of chain businesses and things like that. Your downtown, one of the things I really like about it, actually, is with the exception of a couple of pharmacies here and there and a couple of banks here and there, you have a high percentage of kind of mom and pop style businesses, local investment in your downtown proper. But at the same time, it would seem like that makes those businesses probably a little bit more vulnerable than the businesses along State Street in West Lafayette, because the State Street businesses, the McDonald's of the world and the pizza chains of the world, probably have a little bit more ability to have a different profit margin than the local small restaurants, for instance, that you have in your downtown. So, I mean, is that something you're thinking about?
So that's absolutely part of what we think about. I like to say our downtown is authentic because it is, but you also have those risks involved. And we know we're really going to have to pay attention to these things. It's really important for us to educate those downtown businesses so that they understand where we are headed in the future. And once we get over this bump in the road and get this infrastructure in place and the downtown trail becomes a reality and then her building is occupied and some of those things, I am confident our downtown businesses are going to thrive like never before. We just have to endure a little pain to get there.
We've got a few minutes left with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton on today's Ask the Mayor program here on WBAA. Remember, you can send a question for any of our mayors at any time to our email address, ask@wbaa.org. I also noticed your city has taken some bids on new police vehicles, and I wanted to get into this a little bit because it seems to me that there are only a few models of police cars that are on the road today. And the thing I notice is none of them is particularly gas efficient. You see a lot of like Dodge Chargers out there. You see the occasional SUV, and most of these just guzzle gasoline. And I wondered if that's ever been a consideration in your city, particularly since if you think about it, police cars are kept running a lot of the time. If an officer gets out, it's not like he or she turns off the car in most cases. They're kept running. So is this somewhere where your city could maybe save a little bit on gasoline if you were to think differently and try to find something that's a little more gas efficient the next time around?
We're certainly open to those ideas. You know, ultimately, we have to put police vehicles on the street that keep our officers safe. And a lot of times when you start talking about the more fuel efficient vehicles, they're smaller vehicles. They're not set up to handle the demands of and the rigors of law enforcement activities, and we are not going to put our officers in small vehicles that are not equipped, and don't have the safety ratings that we need and the type of work they do. So we're always looking, and if somebody comes out there with something that's more fuel efficient that can meet the demands of the job, we would love that. But in the meantime, officer safety is our top priority, and we're going to make sure we're putting the vehicles out there to protect them.
Well, on the other hand, though, it's not like you're buying these cars off the rack, so to speak. I mean, what a lot of times happens, so our listeners know, is one of a couple of things. One, either a city buys the vehicle and then has it sort of retrofitted so that it works for the law enforcement purpose, or it buys it with all of those enhancements already on board. And so being that that's the case, being that these are not just right off the assembly line vehicles and you can upgrade them as you see fit, is there a way to find that balance between protecting the officers, as you say, and perhaps saving cost on the upkeep of the vehicle? Because that's something else that I've heard from police chiefs is you wouldn't believe how many times these vehicles have to be brought into the shop for one reason or another.
Right. Well, I think that's partially true. But, what you're buying is when you buy, for example, a Dodge Charger, you're not buying the same Dodge Charger that somebody goes to a dealership and buys. You're buying the enhanced suspension, the enhanced transmission. You're buying all those upgrades that you can't just go buy a normal vehicle off the lot and add. You can't add those things. Then when you get into the equipment that's added after you buy a vehicle, you're talking about the radio systems and the computer systems and all those kind of things. But if you look at a lot of the cars out there today, they just won't fit, And is the computer mounted in a way that won't be impacted by the airbag in a crash and injure the officer? That's a huge concern that we have to make sure we address. You can't put this equipment in there and then have an airbag deploying and blasting that computer into an officer's, face. So a lot to think about there, and police cars are challenging. They're problematic, and I agree there has to be a better way to do it. I spent many years going through the process of speccing out fire trucks and ambulances, and the same thing occurs there. When everybody custom builds every one of these vehicles, it's very, very costly, and there has to be a more efficient, cost-effective way to do it.
I've got to ask whether there's a certain amount of jingoism that goes into this process, too, because I can't ever recall seeing a police car in an American city that was not made by an American company, leaving aside the issue of whether the car might have been manufactured in a foreign country, for instance.
Right, right.
But if there was, like, a German car that's better made than a Dodge Charger, and those things certainly exist, by the way, would your city's leaders even allow the purchase of such a thing, or do you think these cars have to be the few American-made models that we so commonly see on the streets of American cities for that purchase to be approved by the money-spending body?
I don't think we're dead set that it has to be an American-made vehicle. I think the community expects us to put the best product for the best price on the street. Now, will there be some concern if it's not American-made? Most likely there would be, but if we can show that this is a better product for the better, the better value for the taxpayer, I think we're more than willing to do that. We've just not seen that come forth yet, and maybe that gets prevented at a much higher level than us. I'm not sure, but we're open to that. We just have not seen anybody put anything out there. When you look at a lot of the vehicles that are not made here in the States, they tend to be smaller vehicles, or they tend to be configured in a way that does not allow adaptation to, for example, in this case, police work. And you'll see this market change. You'll see, the big three come and go from that market. They'll make a particular model that's adapted to police work, and then they do away with it. It just disappears, So I don't really understand that market entirely, but I'll be the first to tell you there's room for improvement as long as we're keeping our officers safe.
Real quick, in just our last minute or so, we talked last month about the possibility that you were nearing a deal with Walmart to complete a road that's been a source of a lot of back and forth between you and the company. Has that deal been closed since we last spoke?
We've had more good discussions verbally, and the written agreement, I think, is almost done, and there really is just some minor tweaks happening right now. Kind of where it stands right now is that internally, within their structure, they need some sign-offs and some approvals, and they're going through that process right now. And unfortunately, that's just a slow process on their end. Some of these groups literally meet once a month. And so, you try to get on the agenda for this month, and if you don't make it, you're on next month. And that's entirely out of our hands and in their hands. So we just have to let that play out on their end. I feel like we will be through that process, and construction will begin in May. And it won't take long at that point. It'll probably wrap up in a month after that.
All right. Well, Mr. Mayor, that's the time we've got for the show today. Thanks, as always, for your time, especially when you were on the road doing other stuff. And we look forward to next month's show.
Thank you very much.
All right. This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Remember, we've got our program next week with West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. Want to mention to you that that program has actually already been pre-recorded, so we won't be able to take your calls then. But do listen in for our conversation with Mayor Dennis. And if it provokes some questions, send them to our email address. That's ask@WBAA.org. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.